KALW.
It's that holy beep moment when you're like, wow, holy boop, that guy's not playing a guitar.
Some rock stars make do with nothing at all in their hands.
What is air guitar about? It's about sex, it's about drugs, it's about rock and roll. It's wanting to be a rock star but not having the talent or ability to play an instrument.
It's time again, San Francisco's regional air guitar championships. Then we speak with a puppeteer who has their own unique style of puppetry.
I try to make something that is still whimsical but is a little bit more realistic.
And we'll hear from a senior who defied expectations by living a life that is truly her own.
I didn't want my mother's life. I wanted a life that I've had.
That's coming up. I'm Hannah Baba, and this is Cross Currents. Behind every rock star, there are thousands of hours of practice, touring, and rocking out. Of course, to rock out, you don't actually need to know how to play an instrument, at least not at the San Francisco Regional Air Guitar Championships happening later this month. And applications are open right now for aspiring rock gods who'll be judged on their stage presence, technical merit, and something called airness. And if you're not sure what airness is, you are not alone. KLW's Christopher Conley went to find out in this piece from our archives. And a quick note to our listeners, the following story does contain mature subject matter.
By day, Matt Feldstein is a social worker in San Francisco. But at night, he becomes a rock god. Kind of.
Hey everybody, I'm Cold Steel Renegade, the current San Francisco regional air guitar champion.
For the last few years, Cold Steel has pulled on the spandex, dropped his inhibitions, and joined fellow wannabes ripping imaginary axes. The competition is real, even if the guitars are not.
Some people don't understand what it is. In fact, my mom used to think that I was going out and playing actual guitar. She's all, Maddie, you're going out and playing. He's gonna be playing guitar tonight. And I'm like, actually, no, I'm going to be pretending to play a guitar. And it takes a little while to sink in. But she got it after she saw the video and seen some videos. She's fully behind me.
If you, like Cold Steel's mom, aren't familiar with air guitar, it's pretty simple. You get on stage and you pretend to play guitar. But for former U.S. air guitar champions like Dan Crane, a.k.a. Bjorn Turok, it's so much more than that.
It's about sex. It's about drugs. It's about rock and roll. It's wanting to be a rock star but not having the talent or ability to play an instrument. And just wanting that moment on stage in front of a huge crowd where they are just in the palm of your hand and you are melting their face.
Turok took second place in the 2005 World Championships. In a video of that performance, he's resplendent in a pleather vest and pants with blue tassels, ripping power chords so furiously and with such precision that you almost, kind of, if you squint just a little, see a real guitar. Turok's body is taut as he throws his whole wiry frame into the act, his left hand gripping the imaginary neck like a claw, fingers flailing and hammering the frets. His right hand forces scream after shredded scream out of the abused air strings. He windmills his right arm, simultaneously jumping, high-kicking, half-falling, and pelvis-thrusting to punctuate the snarling, face-melting wails of Sweet's Set Me Free.
And you get to become a rock god, which is, you know, when I was a kid, I grew up in the suburbs, and I had all these posters of rock gods on my walls, and I thought, one day, I'm going to be one of those guys. And, you know, I have played in bands for many years and always thought that I would make it as a musician. I didn't. But I've actually made a name for myself as an air guitarist. I mean, I was just out signing some woman's breast, her left breast, actually. And that was what I was hoping to do as a kid, one day sign a woman's left breast. It was nice.
It all started back around 1931, according to the Smithsonian Institution, when a couple of metalheads named George Beauchamp and Adolf Rickenbacker first used an electromagnetic pickup to amplify a guitar. By the early 40s, Les Paul had that thing singing. and while he ripped, his friends who didn't know how to actually play stood around and pretended. And so, air guitar was born. Or at least something like that. But it wasn't until 1996 when a bunch of Finnish guys, from Finland, decided to make a contest out of it. Today, regionals take place all around the world, and the best of the best battle it out in Oulu, Finland, every summer.
My first year, I did AC/DC Safe in New York City.
Again, San Francisco regional air guitar champion, Cold Steel Renegade.
It's a perfect air guitar song. It's got kind of a dance groove to it, but it also has a blistering kind of a face melter. A couple of them, actually.
That's what air guitarists call a solo that rocks.
Just a solo that just tears ass, and you can, you know, just really rip into it. And the crowd loves that.
Once you've got a song, you need a routine.
I like to move around a lot. Yeah, yeah, and kind of tweak my feet in awkward positions and just kind of dance around. Also, facial expressions are a big part of my show, which it's huge. If you're going to play air guitar, you might as well take advantage of your just contorting your face, really.
Then there's wardrobe. Cold Steel goes with cockroach killers, spandex, no shirt, and long hair, let loose.
Yeah, the outfit is, generally speaking, pretty revealing. It's a pretty Spartan, I'd say.
The key to his outfit is a pair of homemade AstroTurf armbands.
Kind of like so. That's my trademark, is the AstroTurf, and you know, I had reflective tape on them last year, but that's also a signature of mine, the turf. I love it.
Now he's ready to shred. Here's how the competition works. There are two rounds. In the first round, performers get 60 seconds to perform a prepared routine to their choice of music. The three-judge panel grades their performance on a 4 to 6 point scale, and then the scores are averaged, just like the Olympics.
In air guitar, we're looking for three things.
Bjorn Turok is one of the judges.
We're looking for technical merit, which doesn't mean that you're playing the right notes on a guitar. It means that you're playing the right notes on an air guitar. It's a totally different kind of thing. The second thing we're looking for is stage presence, charisma, you know, face melting. Do you go out on the crowd and it's like suddenly they are at, you know, the arena, they get their air lighter in their hand and just waving in the air?
The last one is a little more elusive. It's called airness, and it's what air guitar is really all about.
And that is when an air guitar performance exceeds the imitation of guitar playing and becomes an art form in and of itself. It's that holy boop moment when you're like, wow, holy boop, that guy's not playing a guitar. I didn't even notice because it was so awesome.
The top shredders move on to the next round, where they have to improvise for 60 seconds. That's where it really gets ridiculous. By then, the 3-beer minimum for everyone in the house has usually been met with the expected sloppy results.
That's kind of the true test of an air guitarist, is the second round. You pretty much are improvising. You get one chance to hear the song, and then you're on. Then you're on stage for 60 seconds, just trying to do your thing. So, yeah.
Cold Steel Renegade did his thing. He took first place, winning by just a tenth of a point. The show over, the conquering hero and his fellow competitors put away their imaginary axes and called it a night. But they didn't necessarily go home alone. According to former national champ Bjorn Turok, air guitarists, just like real guitarists, have groupies.
Yes, there are air groupies, and they're invisible. Frequently, they're referred to as air mattresses. I don't really approve of that term, but it's what they say. And I've got air syphilis. Or, as it's sometimes called, gonorrhea. I think that's actually a pretty good stage name.
In San Francisco, I'm Christopher Connolly for Cross Currents.
That story originally aired in 2011. The San Francisco Regional Air Guitar Championships will be held in the city at Bottom of the Hill, May 27th. Applications to compete are open now, and you can find a link at klw.org. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. You know how most puppets shown on television are colorful and cuddly? Think the Muppets. Well, puppeteer Dave Hasbrouck's characters have an edge. Dave is the founder of Shadow Circus Creature Theater. He uses latex and foam to create otherworldly puppets of creatures who may have a drink or two on stage and can get raunchy with the audience. His characters have become popular with Bay Area audiences. They've appeared at the Edwardian Ball, SF Oasis, and Kat Robichaux's Misfit Cabaret. KALW's Janae Darden spoke with Dave.
You have puppets of all sizes. And I know Hatchet is like one of your main characters. And what kind of dinosaur is he? I can't pronounce it.
He is a Deinonychus. And he is like, he's been a Deinonychus for about the last 8 years. So when I started doing puppetry when I was 8 years old, very soon after, I really wanted to make films and videos with puppet creatures. And so me and my friend Conan started making these films called Starblick, which was a parody of Star Trek. I had never seen Star Trek. Never seen it. I'd seen The Voyage Home and that was it. And I knew that the baddies, the big bads, were these things called Klingons. Had never seen a Klingon before. This was even before Next Generation, so I'd never seen Worf. Didn't know what a Klingon was. For whatever reason, little tiny Daya decided, like, Klingons are puppet dinosaurs. That's what they'll be.
Okay.
And there needed to be a leader of the static Klingons. That was what I called ours, the static Klingons. There needed to be a leader, and it was like 1986 at this point. And, like, back then, any creature that was cool, like Stripe or, like, you know, your Trapper Keepers and stuff, were, like, all these, like, punk rock creatures with mohawks and everything. So I designed a punk rock dinosaur that was the leader of the bad guys, and his name was Hatchet. And that same character has followed, like, everything I've done from the time I was, like, 11 years old to the current day. And he's, you know, he stopped being an alien a while ago, and everyone called him a dinosaur anyway. So eventually I officially made him a dinosaur. But yeah, this same character and his personality has not changed all that much since I was 11 years old. He's really snarky. He's more of a, he's not a good guy. He's more of a, he's kind of a scam artist. There's a little bit of Bugs Bunny in him, and that we put him in a lot of ridiculous costumes to pull off scams. He's a little bit of a hustler.
You know, there's so much change happening in the Bay Area, especially when artists are trying to find spaces. Mm-hmm. And I was reading an article where you said back in the day, you know, when you wanted to, because I know you write your shows too. So it's like back in the day, if you wanted to, you know, test a show out, you could find a space.
Yeah.
And the venue would just take a cut of the door admissions. And now you were saying now, when you want to run a show or just test it out, you may have to put down 1,000 minimum. Mm-hmm. So what are artists like you doing to... Because that's a lot of money for an artist, you know.
It has been a very long time since I've been able to create a show of my own. And I did shows during quarantine that I wrote and created on my own. I think I got the monkey's paw curse, and then 2020 I said, you know, I want to make time to write and produce some of my own material with my own characters. And that wasn't how I meant to do it, but I did do it, and it reminded me how much I enjoy it. But I don't know where I would go right now, because there were places like Chemo's or the Climate Theater that were only about 60 to 80 people that, as you say, would take a cut of the door. Mm-hmm. And take a risk on an act like you that were perfect. Because, I mean, I would not... Shadow Circus Creature Theater, doing a show as Shadow Circus Creature Theater, would not want to do a show in the same space as, say, Mystic Cabaret. We would get lost. A lot of the larger theaters, not only are they expensive, but they are simply not conducive to something like a puppet show. You want something smaller. And there aren't really these sort of small theaters that will take that kind of risk. I mean, there's some black box theaters. There's things like, you know, Piano Fight and stuff like that. But as you say, as great as those theaters are, you have to have an investment. it. And when I lived in LA, part of what was difficult was they have what was called pay to play, where you had to buy all the tickets in advance and have that money up front. And I was like, if they did that in San Francisco, it would murder the performance scene, because anyone just starting out, if you were like a poor punk kid that didn't have that startup money or didn't have a following yet, or didn't have enough people to throw into a Kickstarter, like, you'd never make it. And that turned out to be absolutely true. I feel like, you know, if I was just starting out now, I mean, right now, I mean, I'm not so wealthy that I could come up with a few thousand dollars to run a show. If I tried to do a Kickstarter, I might have, I mean, I probably have enough folks who kick in for it, but if I was just starting out, there'd be no way. Especially if I was starting out and folks had the mentality before of like, a puppet show in an adult venue? What's that about? Like, there's, I never would have gotten square one.
Cat River Show has come up, and I know you've worked on her show for a long, long time. And then so you have this Cat River Show's Misfit Cabaret Summer Camp show coming up. What can people expect?
Yeah, so the creature I'm building for that is a lake monster. It is actually a creature suit. I will be inside it. I will not be able to see. I may fall off the stage. But yeah, so this one's a little bit different in that it's not a puppet, it's a suit. It's a sort of lake monstery sort of creature from the Black Lagoon inspired monster that she commissioned me to build. That is a character that lives in the lake that adjoins the summer camp, where the story is taking place. And Cat Robichaux plays sort of the little misfit girl, the little outcast girl with glasses. And, you know, that's up against the snotty popular kids that are being mean to her, one of which she's trying to impress. And I don't want to, like, give too many spoilers and stuff, but yeah, it's a lot of the sort of teen summer camp sort of cliches kind of written into a cute little variety show. And it's going to be a lot of fun.
What do you think makes the Bay Area special for doing your style of puppetry?
There is enough people out there that they're interested in something unique and interested in something they don't see every day or see in other places, that it does get a support here that it may not get other places. LA is a lot more open-minded about that sort of thing now. We do well in LA now, and Seattle, I absolutely adore. But there are very, very, very few places like the Bay Area that have this kind of art going on right now. You know, and even though it is difficult here, it's not as though it's any easier anywhere else, frankly. I mean, there isn't, unfortunately, some big, simple artistic mecca everyone's going to that is necessarily supplanted the Bay Area. Is still a little bit tough everywhere. And so San Francisco still really does have a really good hotbed of really unique, talented artists and a very, very strong, warm community.
That was Dave Hasbroek speaking with KALW's Janae Darden. That interview was produced with help from Porfirio Rangel. You can catch Dave with his puppets on stage this weekend at Cat Robichaux's Misfit Cabaret Summer Camp that's at the Alcazar Theater in San Francisco. We've got the details at KALW.org. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. May is Older Americans Month, and we're celebrating with a series that profiles San Franciscans who are 80 and older. It's called 80 Over 80 San Francisco.
A lot of things have changed. A lot of things have not.
Old age is coming along, and I need to have the time to experience it.
Brenda Joyce's life has truly been her own. She says ever since she was a young adult, she's lived a life that ran counter to expectations for women. Here's Brenda.
My name is Brenda Joyce, and I turned 80 December 12th. I have lived in San Francisco 20 years or so in an apartment building run by a Thai family. And he used to have a Thai restaurant as well, and we've become friends over the years. So I had traveled there to Bangkok. I retired 10 years ago. I've been living in Chiang Mai, Thailand during my retirement, but I've traveled the world, and this has been my lifelong plan, and it has worked out given different circumstances in my life. When I was 19, I went to Europe on my own, and I paid for that with babysitting money and working at something called the Chicken Delight, and I am a vegetarian. So I wanted this more than anything. But I saved that money, and I was on a boat, a ship, out of Quebec going to England. And I think they had rough seas or something. I was the only person on deck, and I had a peak experience, is what we used to call this. I was so thrilled that I was actually going to do this, that I was going to see the world, that I was not just talking about it and reading a lot of books. I wasn't like my sisters, didn't have the type of bond a lot of sisters have, because they were very close in age, each had two sons, each living within a mile of each other, so they were just doing their thing all the time. And both sisters had marriage and motherhood as a goal, and I did not. All of the things that I like to do and living in Asia and everything is just like so crazy, you know, who would do that? And as I often say, I've not been in jail yet. So, you know, this was the way I went, and let's all appreciate our differences. I have been married. I have no children. My oldest nephew was born when I was 14, and the others quickly afterward, and they were like little brothers. It was fun. Leaving my birth state at such an early age, I didn't have that whole growing up with the family thing and the expectations of, my cousin's getting married and I should be getting married, or, you know, why don't you have children or something like that. In fact, I do not get too personal, but I didn't want my mother's life. I wanted a life that I've had. We were the cousins that came to California. Absolutely everyone was in Kentucky. So I didn't grow up with aunts and uncles and grandparents and anything. We just moved out here. But this is one thing that the internet has brought us closer, those of us that are still around. And it's wonderful, really, that we can share things. Otherwise, they would really be strangers to me. And so I'm sort of bonding at this age. Since I didn't have a family, essentially, it's wonderful to have one now. And to have four nephews that are straight-up guys, you know, they step up. And if I'd had children, I'm not sure what my feelings would be, if I would have felt that they kept me from doing what I wanted to do, or, you know, any of that. It wasn't really a mistake, I think. It was a choice, and I'm glad I made it.
That was Brenda Joyce, interviewed for the 80 Over 80 San Francisco Project. The lead audio producer for the project is Aussie Linus Goodman, and Achotos is the project director. You can find more profiles of San Franciscans at KELW.org. Today's Cross Currents team includes Angela Johnston, Kristen McCandless, Dorothy Tang, Johanna Miyake, Gabe Graben, Victor Tense, Lisa Morehouse, Shia Levitt, Sunni Khaled, and Ben Trefney. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet, as interpreted by Daoud Anthony. For Cross Currents, I'm Hanat Baba.